Delivery Bros.
In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Hey, what's up, guys? My name is Anthony Anthem, a.k.a. Black Fabio, a.k.a. the Midnight Marauder, a.k.a. Mr. A.k.a. Yeah, today we have a special guest, a prominent author. Young and full of fire. Got something for the soul for every reader's desire. I'm talking something original, something organic, something that's made from the heart. Lightness and dark come together to bring something of a full balance. This is yin and yang, something internal, something that is what to the inferno. Maybe a little bit of gas to supply. Something that will make you feel like this is a natural high. No Snoop Dogg. But the fact of the matter is, right before me is a contest winner, an exceptional artist, a beautiful mind, brilliant. Spoken highly of by a couple of good friends like David Montoya. You know what, Mademoiselle, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure, I'd be happy to. My name is Melissa Elms, and I am a poet, but I don't think I'm as good a poet as my host here. I think you kind of beat me.
I just want to listen to you. I'm just an average Joe with an average flow, Mademoiselle. I do a little too extra on the intro.
That's all fine. It's good.
I know sometimes, like, sometimes the people that probably listen to me, they're like, oh, God, here he goes. It was like, well, if it's any consolation, I have fun doing it because I want to, you know, build up people and not, you know, knock them down. Because I'm one man, but when I have special people like yourself on the show, it's awesome, seriously. Because, shoot, I've never written a poetry book before. Like,
actually, I've never written a poetry book before either. This is the first one.
Hey, the fact that you put the time and effort in it, that's awesome in itself.
Like, it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. Originally, I didn't really know about this open contract challenge. And David kind of, did he Facebook me or did he tweet? He tweeted or Facebooked at me and he was like, hey, are you thinking about doing the open challenge? And I was like, well, I don't know. What is that? So it kind of went from, I'm not doing anything, to here's how I spent my summer. And well, every step of the way, it was just, I was astonished. Like, you know, because it was coming as the contest was going. So it was like the first week you do a pitch and I was like, all right, here's an idea. This is a crazy idea. They're going to think this is crazy. And they were like, hey, you made it into the contestants. And I was like, oh, now I have to actually write something. So I kind of rolled around in words, you know, like a dog in carrion for a little while. And I came up with about 15 pages of poetry. And I was like, this is fun. It's probably not very good. I'm going to send it in. And then they were like, hey, yeah, this is great. So now you need to do a full synopsis. And so every step, you know, the contest is multiple steps, and each step is being judged by a group of people. And every step of the way, I was just like, this is the last week. They're definitely not going to. And then it was in the final two. And I think that's when it hit me that I could actually win this thing. And I looked at my husband and I was like, I could actually win this thing. Are they crazy? Have they lost their minds? And apparently, yes. The answer to that is yes. They've lost their minds.
Because she ended up winning the thing.
I done won the thing. I don't know.
Yeah, because David was like, yo, Anthony, I need you to interview her. I was like, what's going on? Remember that contest I told you about? I was like, oh, she the one that wins?
Right?
Okay.
Did you read what I wrote? I mean, this should, I don't know.
This is it. I haven't read it yet. I want to read it. I want to know what happens. I'm like one of those guys, like, I want to read stuff like that. I like poetry.
Yeah.
Like, I write sometimes, but I don't think I'm going to be that great where I'm winning contests, girl.
I didn't think I was going to be that either.
Well, It's already happened. You won the contest.
I know. I'm still in shock. I haven't had time to process yet. I mean, and this happened in August, and I still haven't had time to process yet.
So, girl, it's October.
I know. I'm really busy. I'm a professor. I teach medieval literature and mythology and all those things. And so the academic term started, and I just haven't had a chance to like sit back. But I have. My daughter made the artwork for it, and she did the cover. So I have, you know, 92 pages of a manuscript and a cover. So I guess the book is happening.
Yeah, because I forgot you're going to get published and you won the contest, right? That's right.
Yeah, no, it's really exciting. It's going to be both online and print venues. So an actual book, which is surreal and fabulous.
Shout out to Jay Lamont Productions for that, because seriously.
Yes. No, David is the epitome of generosity and goodwill and kindness.
I love that guy.
Encouraging and motivating, and just has been wonderful. Wonderful to work with. Yeah.
You want to talk about having somebody good in your corner? David Montoya is that guy.
Seriously. Absolutely. He absolutely is. Yeah.
That's my buddy right there. I love that guy. if he ever asks me for 50 million favors, I do it for him. I mean, heck, he does the intro to this show.
Yeah,
like he made my intro, so I mean he was just like, hey Anthony, I got something for you. I was like, what? Yeah, I made you an intro. I was just like, for real? I was like, yeah. How much you want for it? Nothing.
Yeah.
That's the type of dude he is. Like he's helped me out tremendously. I'm very thankful that I got to meet him. And if he's watching this, sincerely, David, thank you for being a good friend, not only to me, but for this wonderful young lady right here. Yes,
thank you.
Who has a book coming out, publishing. So what's the name of the book going to be for all the listeners?
The book is called Arthurian Things, A Collection of Poems.
Arthurian Things, The Collection of Poems.
Arthurian Things, A Collection of Poems. And it's a book of poetry that's set in the sort of King Arthur universe, which is really... as I describe in my introductory remarks to the book, it's kind of the original multiverse. You know, it really starts in Wales, and then the legend kind of travels from Wales to England and to France and to Germany. And there's a Spanish Arthurian literature, an Italian Arthurian literature, Icelandic and Nordic. I mean, it just kind of traveled all the way around the world. And each one has a slightly different flavor, and each one has some different characters and adds some things and puts some things together and conflates some things. And so it's like, I think Marvel got their ideas from King Arthur.
I could believe that. I mean, it comes down to, I mean, the medieval times was like the renaissance of literature. Even in dark times, like the Dark Ages, there was some literature. It was pain. It was hunger. There was... lots of love. There was a lot of
Christianity in the Western European tradition. It was a lot of sermons and letters and chronicles explaining how people got to where they are and why they should be Christian. I mean, it's just like a lot of the older literatures are kind of establishing identities in a lot of ways.
Identities and entities.
Yes.
It's like, for the quest of the Holy Grail.
Yeah, the Holy Grail comes into the Arthurian tradition around about the 12th century, and that's a French writer, Robert de Boron, who writes that. The Quest of the Saint Grail is the English translation of the title. And it's been part of the Arthurian legend from pretty much the get-go, which is really interesting, yeah.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, this young lady right next to me, she is also very brilliant, as you can tell. IQ of a television. Teaching the future so that way we cherish what has brought us here in the past. Amongst the masses, she unleashes full potential in the hearts and souls of educated minds.
Well, at least that's what we say we do. I don't know how successful that is. No, my students are outstanding, and I want to give them a shout out. They have been tremendous. I've been teaching at this university since 2016. And really just bright and curious and open to new ideas and willing to do the work. Just the, you know, I mean, you're from Kansas City, so you know the Midwestern work ethic is well at play here.
And insanity.
They're delightful. Like, they're really, I have wonderful students. Really, really blessed in my students.
You know, some teachers be like, oh, yeah, I got great students. But I can tell you really love your students.
I really do. They're great. They're wonderful. Oh, I can show you something fun. My first batch of students did the student research conference, which is the big thing in the spring where you share your research. And they were in my Chaucer class, and they all were doing kind of something with Chaucer and women or Chaucer and fairies. And so they put together a panel, a round table, talking about Chaucer, and they won a prize. And I had been talking with one of them about, you know, my office, and I thought I wanted like a couch, but I wasn't sure what kind of couch. So I was thinking about getting one, but I didn't know yet. So they took that contest money and they bought me a couch. So if you
look, they bought you a couch?
Which direction do I need to go? There. Is that
the right? Left. Go left. This way? Right there.
Get out of the way. That's my couch.
They actually bought you a couch?
They bought me a couch. It's a fainting couch. It's really, really pretty.
It looks really expensive.
I don't know if it's expensive or not. I don't think they spent more than they won. But it was really kind. Like, so that's the kind of student that I have. They're like, they took my class and they won this prize. And instead of investing it in like pizza or new clothes or something, they bought me a couch because they were appreciative of what I did. And that's the Lindenwood student is a generous, hardworking, motivated, bright, interesting person. We're very lucky here.
Oh, see. Teachers like you are what makes me have faith in education. we got our problems in the education system, but when we have teachers like you that are passionate about what you do,
you'd be hard pressed to not find a teacher like me on this campus. It's pretty much RMO. Everybody.
Girl, where were you at when I went to college?
I was still in college, hon.
I mean, shoot, like, seriously, because I was in college from 2007 all the way until 2009.
Yeah, I was in college.
Yeah, if I would have been around you, I think I would have probably did a lot less. Who wants to do a beer bong? Oh.
Well, I mean, our students play hard, too. You work hard, play hard.
I mean, yeah, you could have a balance, but man, I had some teachers in there that were just like, huh? I had this biology teacher. Bless his heart, but that man spoke in such a monotone. It's like, today we're going to learn about the atoms and how they become one to make the particles into the half the class asleep. Loved him.
To take coffee with you to those classes.
Girl, coffee wasn't going to help. Like, I would sit there. I would sit there with like a giant 40-ounce of coffee, and I'm still like, falling asleep. It just made me all warm and happy, and then I'm tired again. And I'm in a cold classroom too. That didn't help either, because I like sleeping in the cold. So it was just like a mix. I was just like, I'm so relaxed. What? The class is over? Oh, no, I'm going to fail this test.
When I was an undergraduate, I have like low vitamin D deficiency, mm-hmm. and I've had historically sort of chronic low white blood cell counts. And so I'm, you know, a little bit anemic.
Right.
And I realized as an undergraduate that I should not take afternoon courses because my notebooks would be full of like really eager, ambitious notes. And then they would kind of trail off into little scribbles where I was falling asleep.
See, my problem was I was taking early morning classes, girl. When I was in school.
Oh, so then I, and one of my teachers, a really remarkable professor, Dr. Martha Houle, who taught French at William & Mary, pulled me into her office. You know, she was like, come have a meeting. And she was like, you keep falling asleep in class. Is it boring? And I was like, no, it's not you. It's me. I have a medical thing. I'm so sorry. I really love you. I think you're wonderful. I was so mortified. but I've learned from that, that sharing that concern for your students is very important, but also sharing it in a way that makes it safe for them. You know, you don't have to necessarily love my class, right? What are we going to do to make it work for you?
Right.
Or if it's not working for you, what is the alternative besides you just failing, right? So it's really important to me. And I think she gave me such a lovely model of like showing concern, showing interest in a student who's maybe struggling. So I've had good exemplars to follow.
See, that's special right there. And shout out to all the teachers that are concerned about their students and want to make sure to lift them up and not bring them down.
Yeah,
those are absolutely the teachers we need in this life system, regardless if it's college, high school, K-5, middle school, whatever it may be. Just, I appreciate y'all, because when it comes down to it, this is not an easy job. Y'all don't get paid a lot, and I just want you to know you guys matter in our communities. That goes for you too, Miss Melissa.
Hey, teachers.
Great teachers, seriously. Thank God for them, seriously.
Yeah.
I've had some teachers that have captured my heart and made me feel special because they cared about me. Those are the teachers I always will remember. So, there's some great teachers out there. There's greatness everywhere. All depends. Are you bringing passion? Or are you bringing water to the fire? We're young torches. Build our fires. Oh my gosh.
Friday afternoon.
I need to stop. Oh my gosh. What am I saying right now? It's like word vomit.
I think it was deep.
Ladies and gentlemen, to all 7 of you, I know we're probably down to like 3 viewers now. So I just want to take this time and let you know that I ain't got nothing on this. You know what? So Melissa, so back to your writing. So
yeah.
we decided to when you were inspired by basically medieval times, because that is something that you do when you're teaching and everything. So you wanted to include something of a time that could tell a story through these poetry sonnets, right?
What I was interested in doing with this project is there's a sort of a received understanding in contemporary, particularly Western cultures, of the Arthurian tradition as sort of this like paragon of chivalry, and the knights and the jousting and the ladies and the damsels and the waving banners and the feasts and everything was just hunky-dory and lovely and wonderful. And what I was interested in, you know, those of us who study it in a scholarly fashion, who look at it critically, see that is a very sort of finely honed veneer on the top of the legend, but in actuality it's very much about struggle and questions of ethics, questions of good leadership and bad leadership, good behavior as a knight, bad behavior as a knight. There's some, you know, ethnicity and race in there. There's a whole lot of gender in there, sort of spectrums of masculinity, spectrums of women. And so what I was interested in with this collection was trying to go into the cracks in that finely honed veneer and find the fault lines that would fracture the Arthurian legend and share some of the more wibbly wobbly things in it, the kind of looking at it from a completely different perspective. So most of the poems are from the perspective of objects instead of people. So rings and swords and a silver ingot in the treasury and a door, wishing well. And then the last set of poems are sort of, mostly they're just kind of like a thought activity. So a set of sonnets that are very much the sort of, or intended to be, introspective personas of some of the characters, kind of looking at what's under the surface of what we see. It was really interesting because it helped me think into and through and with more than just the stories and the like deeds and what people do and say, and more into kind of metatextual ideas, like big ideas.
Okay.
I want
to read that. That's actually kind of, that's pretty freaking cool, actually.
Yeah.
I like that perspective right there. That'd be something I would be interested in, you know, like, seriously. Like, ladies and gentlemen, when this book comes out, which I'm already anticipating, even if I gotta put it, please tell me I can get it on Amazon.
Well, not yet, but I think when it is out, it's gonna be available on all the platforms, yeah.
Good. So I'm gonna need you guys to, when it's time for reservation, reserve it on your Amazon tablet, reserve it and get a hard copy.
Get a book. Get a book. It has pretty pictures in it.
Get both. You know what? Have one so that way you can take it on the road on vacation. You know, the husband and kids are screaming in the car. You decide you want to put on a little Sade or something like that. You know, tune them out with more canceling headphones and just read a little bit. Go into a fantasy world. Get yourself into a more historical perspective through these items. And be like, you know, when he asked me to marry him, I wish he would have gave me a ring like that. Now I'm understanding why certain people wanted to behead other people in this this era. Now, I'm sorry, that was terrible. And then, for your nightstand, make sure you have a hard copy. So, you know, you're reading, you can enjoy it, your husband's watching the game or something like that. And you take a pause. You put in your book. You put in your book note. You look at your husband. You think to yourself, you know, with a little bit of hemlock, I could probably take care of this and get a new man.
That's terrible.
Don't do that. Don't do that. I was kidding.
Don't take his advice at all.
I was kidding. This is okay. Humor.
All right, humor. Good. Okay.
This is humor. I promise.
Actually, it's interesting because some of the poems are they're intended to be humorous. They're very funny. And some of them got dark. So there's a range. There's something for everybody.
So yes, there's some dark poetry in there. So if you're a Gothic woman or a Gothic male who enjoys, you know, sitting down at your local coffee shop and you're sipping your chai tea or coffee and you're looking for something to soothe your soul, that's something that brings, you know, what's the word? The epitome of a crow spreading its wings into a dark, stormy night. On the steeple of an old chapel. This might be for you.
See, now I blew it because I don't have a poem with a crow on the steeple of a chapel, but that would be exactly the kind of poem that would go in this collection. I do have a pigeon on the parapet looking down at the soldiers going off to war. So that's one of the sort of more introspective, darky ones. But I don't have a crow on a steeple at a chapel.
See, this is how I know that I'm an idiot, but thank you very much for putting up with me. So do you go more by Ridge or do you go by Elms more?
It's for professional purposes, it's Ridley Elms. That's my maiden name and my married name. Ooh. But you know, I mean, Elms is fine. Ridley Elms is a kind of a mouthful. Ridley
Elms. So yeah. Okay, so a little bit about you. So how long have you been married, Miss Ridley?
Oh goodness, how long have I been married?
Oh boy. 13. That long?
16 years?
16 years?
2003?
Girl, you look kind of young to be married for 16 years.
Well, you know, you meet the love of your life young, you go for it, right?
hey, love can keep you youthful, guys.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, since 2003. So that's, yeah, that's 16 years, right? Yeah.
16 years. How old were you when you got married?
Oh, 29.
You, that would mean you're, no.
A very really? Shiny-tailed 45, yes.
Okay, so so if you look right here, the Fountain of Youth is within the medieval studies.
I mean, yeah. You know, you hang out with the fairies, they take you to Tir-na-n-og, which is the land of eternal youth and beauty. Now, I got the eternal youth, so that's good.
she looks like she about 20-something.
Oh, that's,
I thought I was older than her.
It's the lighting. I have good lighting in here.
Yeah, that's some great lighting because you're glowing right now. I'm like, man, I was like, man, she looks all young and stuff. She's young, youthful, a teacher, full of spirit and drive. And here's me.
Well, I think too, you know, I mean, your students keep you young, so that's helpful too.
You know what? Maybe I should have went into teaching. So, I mean, look at this. You see that?
I think you look great.
Girl.
You have good lighting too.
Well,
we all have good lighting. Everybody on Zoom has good lighting.
Well, Anthony Anthem, aka the Mahogany God, you know, it took me a long time to really chisel this. This is how much I take myself seriously. Like, I really don't take myself that serious.
Yeah, I learned a long time ago. I take my work seriously. I take what I do seriously. Mm. I take my word seriously. I take my responsibilities seriously, but you really can't take me as a person very seriously. No,
you really can't. Like everything you just named, yeah, I can do.
Yeah.
But myself, like, no, I'm too goofy. Nah,
you are talking to somebody who cannot walk and hold a thought in her head at the same time without tripping or falling on something. So, I mean.
Girl, I tried doing that the other day. Okay, so Wednesday, right? I had to interview a jazz pioneer.
Ooh.
Yeah, her name is Monday Michiru. Shout out to her.
Hi.
And she came. She did the jazz scene for the style Acid Jazz, which is really popularized and was made into a big movement in Japan in the 90s. And it kind of crossed over and everything. It's awesome. But anyway, so I'm thinking about that, walking down my stairs.
Oops.
I get to five stairs before I get to the floor. I fall and drive my knee right into one of the chairs in the dining room.
Oh, no. Ow.
I just lay there. I'm just like, you know, if I was about 10 years younger, I probably wouldn't have felt this bad. I can't get up right now. You know what? Maybe I need to start thinking about having an ointment jar. That's get an ointment jar somewhere. You know, just make sure I have all my ointments at the icy hot ready and stuff. I'm just like, I should have started getting my ointment drawer ready for this. Like, I thought I was gonna die.
It's getting old thing, man. It's hard.
I'm starting to understand that, like, and casualty. This is my life. This is my life on camera. Anyway. Okay. Okay, let's try this again.
I see you.
Okay.
All
right. So, where were we? So anyway. Okay. So anyway. I realized that holding a thought, multitasking for me is dangerous and could probably catch something on fire. Like my knee.
Somebody could get hurt, probably me.
I was like, you know what? My insurance deductible is going to be so bad by next year. That's when you know you're getting older. You're just like, man, if this happens, is my insurance deductible going to go up? Oh my gosh. I'm sorry you had to put up with me. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a champion right here. Miss Melissa's been putting up with me. I don't even know how long we've been doing this, and we're not even in the full hour yet. So, okay. So, back to your wonderful writing. So we're going to have a little bit of dark. We're going to have a little bit of light. Mm-hmm. Is there love?
Sort of. There's a lot about love gone awry. There's a lot about, you know, I mean, obviously the Arthurian legend, one of the things that's very famous about it is the triangle, the love triangle between Arthur and Guinevere and Lancelot. Mm-hmm. So in one of the poems, Guinevere's door weighs in on how it's doing its job and it's really good at its job. And so it's closed. And so it's not sure how everybody thinks they've got all this knowledge and information because it's doing its job, right? So kind of thinking about, you know, the rumors and the way that people make the story happen, even if they don't have the information, kinds of things goes into it. There is a set of poems between, there's one poem between, there's a sort of a set of letters between Guinevere and Lancelot where they're kind of setting out where they are now. Mm-hmm. There's a poem where Guinevere is trying to sort things out so everything's like makes sense in her head. And that one's very language oriented. It's very based on syllables and words. Mm-hmm. And then there's one, you know, there's one where Arthur's just, he just lays it out and he's like, this is how it is. This is where I am, you know? It's not about you people talking about it. It's about me, you know? So there are a couple of poems about that, but mostly it's just about objects weighing in on, you know, how do knights feel going into joust for shits and giggles? Like, are they happy about it? Do they want to do it?
Is it nervy?
You know? Are they just doing it because they have to? You know, it's just thinking about those sort of bigger picture questions, like the individual and the community, the relationships, the secrets, the disappointments. You know, yeah.
Bearing witness from another perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. Like coming at it from a completely different angle, looking at the objects, the things that are always there, like flies. The flies weigh in, the bees weigh in. I think there's another set, ants. The ants want to have their fair play, you know. Because they're there, you know, you've got barns, you've got horses, you're going to have ants. So why don't they ever get, you never see them, right? So they demand a union. They demand a union.
Fair enough, because, I mean, when it comes down to it, it must be nerve-wracking. Because, like, I'm thinking about that right now.
Right?
Jousting is a very dangerous sport.
You've never thought about Arthurian ants before.
No, and to see their perspective of a man jousting. Mm-hmm. It's like, what's he doing behind the scenes when he's getting ready?
Yeah.
He's like, okay, he looks rather nervous. He looks more nervous than an anteater coming at my hill kind of thing. I mean, yeah. I know they don't have anteaters in that part of the world, but still, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just trying to look at it, just open it up and see what happens is kind of, I mean, that's really what I did when I wrote this. I just opened it up to see what I could find. It was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. It took me to places I didn't expect to go to. Mm-hmm. Mostly it showed, it was, because, you know, you get about 30 pages in and you're like, I need more objects. So I go on Facebook and I'd be like, give me an Arthurian object that you would associate with a knight that's not these other 10 things I've already written about, right? So yeah, I mean, I really called on my community. And fortunately, I have a lot of, you know, medievalists among my friends. So so they, you know, they threw down and they were like, well, what about the carpet? And I was like, ooh, that's good. Yeah, what about the carpet? What would the carpet think, right? What about the chair? Like, what would that chair in the dining room think? The one that they, like, stick all their boogers on. So that, you know, that's the kind of poem you can expect.
What about the crackling fire in the fireplace?
Yeah, well, what about the fireplace? What about the wood in the fireplace? What about, you know, what about the flower that got picked in the garden and is sitting on the table waiting to die? Right? Like, that's kind of, yeah. So I got really kind of, I don't want to say deep because I don't think these poems are especially deep. But I went into a very introspective, contemplative place when I was writing them. And and most of them, you know, they're fun. They're not they're not meant to be, you know, groundbreaking, earth-shattering, you know, high literature with a capital L poems, but I think there's a lot in them that is literary. In terms of, you know, I mean, obviously they're poetry, so they follow some of the conventions. You know, there's a few that rhyme. There's a lot of assonance and consonants, which is the repetition of vowel sounds and consonant sounds to create that sort of rhythm. Right. Pay attention a lot to meter, how the lines moved. Some of them are in stanzas. I've got, you know, a sonnet cycle, which is 14 sonnets. So I paid attention to the structures and I paid attention to the poetic formalities. But as I was writing, I also found that a lot of attention was just going into the ideas, these overarching ideas, about what it means to be human, but coming at it from a non-human perspective, or trying to, right? Because I'm not a chair.
I feel that.
Sometimes made it difficult. You know, how do you think about, like, I don't know, what can I, you know, one of the poems is about Excalibur's imposter syndrome. I mean, you know, just fun things, but there are fun things that also dig into the kinds of considerations that we have for ourselves that we think sometimes when we're just like getting all thoughtful about it. I don't know.
Man. That's very interesting though. I don't know, because, like, I would have never thought about something like that. I don't think a lot of people want to know.
Well, and the reason this whole thing happened is, again, because David contacted me out of the blue and said, hey, are you thinking about entering this challenge? And I was like, I don't really have anything. I'll think about it. Let me get back to you. And I was like, what could I do? What has not already been done? What can I do reasonably? Like, I can't write a 5-book cycle right now. I don't have time for that. And I was just like, I was working on my MFA in writing. And I was working for my thesis. I finished it. I was doing a translation of the first and the third sort of books or fits of Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, which is another Arthurian text. And I was like, well, maybe I could do something like that is my thesis. So I can't do that for this book, but maybe I could do something like in that area that's Arthurian. I don't know, maybe poems. And so that's kind of, I mean, it was all very organic and it, you know, I don't, as a writer, I don't ascribe to the idea that there's like divine inspiration and you're just sitting there and suddenly, boom, Dante's Inferno comes pouring out of you. Like, that's not realistic. But there was a degree of, at that time, in the petri dish of my mind,
right,
the ideas came together in a way that suggested a collection of poems. And that's kind of where it started, I think.
So basically there was just a lot of thought placed into it.
Yeah.
You know, you see movies or something like that, somebody gets sort of inspiration as a writer or something like that. It's just like endorphin hits.
Well, and it did, right? Because I had 2 weeks to come up with the first chapter. So I was like, okay, how long, first of all, with a book of poetry, how long is a chapter? I don't, like 15 poems? So I asked, you know, I polled people and I was like, is 15 poems like a chapter? And most of my friends were like, yeah, that sounds good. Like, why do you need a chapter of poems? And I was like, I can't tell you. It's a secret. And so, you know, for the first set, I just had to bang out 15. And I was just kind of reaching for whatever came. But after that went through and they were like, hey, this is actually really compelling, I was like, well, okay, so now I've got a little bit more space. I've got about 6 weeks and I can kind of, and that's not very much time. I mean, it sounds like a lot, but it's really not.
It's not.
When I was working on this, it was pretty much, I was either working on this or working on my MFA thesis every single day for 10 or 12 hours. And I, you know, my process was kind of, I'd wake up in the morning and I'd have a coffee and I'd go outside and I'd walk with my coffee and just let my mind kind of dwell on things or wander. If it was wandering, sometimes it dwelled and sometimes it wandered and sometimes it was obsessive and sometimes it was empty. And then I would sit down and I would just throw down ideas. And sometimes the ideas were poems and sometimes it was just words. And sometimes it was like a phrase. And then I would stop and go do whatever else and then come back to it and kind of look through it and shape it and try to make it do something that was more than just like words on a page. And that, you know, that was pretty much how it worked. And then I would go back and reread some of the things I'd done earlier to mm-hmm. make sure the tone was going through. And then I'd realize, oh, there's this other thing that needs to happen. Or I'd go back and I'd be like, I don't like the structure of that poem at all. It needs to have this other structure. So mm-hmm. it was constantly drafting forward, revising backward, rewriting forward, revising backward. And it kind of, I was concerned all the way up until the end that I didn't have an actual unified collection. Right. And then maybe the last week, I only had 75 pages and I felt like it needed to be a little bit more than that. And I got the idea, you know, I love sonnets, and I thought, well, I'll write a sonnet. And then I thought, well, but what if I wrote a sonnet for each line of a sonnet and like did 14 sonnets from 14 characters' perspectives? And that somehow that worked and it finished it out. And I still don't know how that worked. So I'm not a writing expert, clearly. No idea what happened. But it came together and it made sense and it reverberated without repeating anything. And it was doing new work in the ideas and echoing what had already happened in the rest of the book. And I was like, okay, I like this. This is working for me. And it'll be interesting to see what other people think about it, right? Because you mm-hmm. live with it in your head, and it's so close to you. One of the things that I had to do was when I submitted it for the challenge, I set it aside and I just didn't even look at it again. And, you know, I didn't. And after it was announced that I won, after I got over the shock and pulled my jaw up off the floor, I thought, well, I probably want to go back and reread this. And when I reread it, I was pleasantly surprised. There was a lot in it that I still really liked. I don't think that's always the case, especially when you're writing thickly. So I've got, I think, a little bit more time to just finagle with it a little bit mm-hmm. before I have to submit it for final publication. But I have, you know, I haven't been finagling as much as I expected to, and that's been rewarding. Like it's pretty cool.
So you got like 92 pages, correct?
Yeah. The whole thing is 92 pages. That includes notes. Like I tried to include like reading notes for people mm-hmm. to explain who some of these characters are and talk about some of the like bigger picture themes that are overarching the stories.
Right.
So it's got some of that, but mostly just poems.
Wow. So how many poems are we looking at all together?
Oh, how many poems are in here?
And so begins the count, y'all.
I know, I'm right?
A cup of coffee.
I am actually counting.
She's digging in. She's going through the manuscript right now. She's focusing. As you look at her eyes of inspiration, she is going in, trying to make sure she can bring us a number, the amount. So with that, as she's going in, trying to find that, I, Anthony Anthem, am going to be the spectator in this. Doing the
61.
Commentary.
There are 61, I think. 61. I might have miscounted. There might be 62, but there's definitely 61.
It's in the 60s, y'all. As you look at her elegant face right here, she is a master of poetry.
Well, I'm working on it. I do. I cop to being a poet. A master poet, maybe not quite yet, but I'm working on that.
I'm more casual. Pots, pans, spans, bands. Okay, hands. Okay, there we go. Beautiful. Six words. Okay.
Six words?
That's it. And that's my genius.
Okay.
I'm kidding.
I'm like, what does he want me to do now? Six words.
Nothing at all. Just bear with me.
Okay.
I'm not as cool as you, so I'm just going to...
No, I'm not. I am the... I self-identify as a lifetime laminated card-carrying member of the Geek Club. I am not cool.
Girl, I've been a nerd since 1993.
Ooh, ooh, ooh. I'm going to put this out there because you should always put things into the universe if you want them to happen, right? So in my acknowledgments or in my about the author, I wrote that now that I've finished this book, my new goal is to get Critical Role to have me on for a one-off and have a drink that I get to create to have a conversation with Brian Foster. So that is the level of nerd that I aspire to. I would be really good at Dungeons & Dragons with them, though. I've played for a long time. I have good voices.
You played Andy?
Oh, yeah. I told you. I'm a laminated card-carrying member of the Geek Club.
Girl, what character do you use?
I almost always a half-elf druid because I am a nerd, a double nerd. And because it dovetails really nicely with my sort of medieval folklore and things that I know about that stuff. So.
Well, girl, I got some people for you to meet.
Yeah.
Me, I'm usually half-orc, half-orc or monk. I know that's a weird combination, half-orc, monk.
Monk or ranger, right?
Yeah, it's super weird, but that's my character.
Yeah.
He's a bit lecherous, but I promise you. Yeah, I play from time to time myself. My little brother got me into it. Shout out to DeLauren, and shout out to his boyfriend, Cody,
aka
Donut and Wolf. You can check out their stream on Twitch. They're always playing Monster Hunter and talking D&D.
There you go.
Oh, yeah. But... I gotta say, it's an incredible game. I like the fact that you get to be creative and use your imagination.
Well, and that's the beauty of it, right? I mean, it's just another, for me, you know, as a professor of literature, as a student of literature, as a writer, this is just another way to tell a story, right?
Yes.
But it's collaborative, and that's what I really love about, like, you cannot do it yourself, and you shouldn't do it yourself, and building together, like, creating things together is my favorite thing to do. Like, it's just wonderful, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm the same way. I'm not going to lie, though. My brother is a sadist when we play, because when he runs the campaign, it usually involves me giving off a piece of something. It's like, hey, I need a couple darts. Okay, I'll take a piece of your skin. How many strips? Three. Can I have anesthesia? Nope. Ah!
See, and women go through that all the time when they wax their legs. So, I mean...
You know, somebody actually tried that with me once, like a lady friend of mine. I was like taking a nap on her couch, and all of a sudden I felt like this hot oil on my leg. I'm like, what are you doing? She was like, oh, nothing.
Right? And it hurts. And you have newfound appreciation for how much pain women can withstand.
I'm just like, why did you do that to me? What did I do to deserve this? I don't know. It was funny. Just wanted to let you know what we go through. I was like, I never had any problem with, I never said it looked easy. Why didn't you do this to your boyfriend? He looks like a chimpanzee. I don't even grow that much hair.
Did you cry? Did tears spring to your eyes?
Let me put it like this. My fist balled up by itself.
I totally cried.
And it was just a little bit, it was a little intense because it just happened all of a sudden in my sleep. So I was tired and emotional. I was hurting. I think I had stomach cramps. I want to go cry.
See, right now, he's tearing up remembering it. So, yeah, it had a real visceral...
That was some past trauma. See, there's a lot of things I don't understand what women do and do it every day. Wearing high heels, being able to run into them, I would die.
Hey, that's one of my vices. I love shoes.
Yes.
It's very bad.
I couldn't do it. You guys, like, I can do high heels, still look good, even though your feet are hurting.
You know, honestly, I think I've beaten my feet into submission because they don't really hurt anymore when I wear heels. It's just like, oh, okay, we're doing that again today. But I also danced for a long time. And so, you know, I'm used to a lot of torture.
So you got trained feet. Gotcha.
They are trained to withstand all forms of maiming and evil.
See, because I was thinking to myself, because, like, I know drag queens. So, like, they wear heels, and some of them can do backflips.
Theirs are, like, eight-inch heels. Like, I can't do that, no.
And them girls doing backflips and stuff. Yeah. Doing ballroom dances and stuff, do the backflips, do the dance halls. I'm just like, how are you able to do that?
I have respect for them. I have no idea. The highest I can go is 3.5 inches, and then I'm, like, falling over because it's too tall, or I'm getting a nosebleed because I'm elevation so high.
I'm not gonna lie, the champion of wearing heels or platforms for men definitely goes to Prince. Mm-hmm. That man knew how to walk in those shoes.
Yeah, he did.
He could dress in the most outlandish clothes and look better than the girl he's with. And then on top of that, still your girl looking like that.
Has he ever not been the most beautiful person in the picture?
Apollonia, right? But that's probably the closest.
Yeah, there is that.
But he's Prince. He's prettier than everybody.
Really? I mean, but yeah. Except maybe ScarJo.
Oh my gosh, I forgot about that.
Right.
That's up to debate for another day, y'all. And then I couldn't do it. I'm sorry. I could never be a woman. I don't know how you do it. I'd be the worst woman. I'd be the worst representative for all women.
Well, I mean, to be fair, I don't know how I'd be a guy at this point. I'm pretty set in my woman ways. So.
Sometimes you don't even have to literally change shoes to understand that some shoes should not be worn.
Mm. Yes, flip-flops.
You know what? If everybody could just wear flip-flops, they were probably
worn. No, flip-flops should never be worn.
No, I thought that was Crocs.
Well, I also don't think Crocs should ever be worn, but flip-flops are on my no-wear list.
I mean, maybe around the house I might do that, but that's about it.
Barefoot, either barefoot or fun shoes.
Well, I mean, I go barefoot, so that's just how I do my thing. But some people wear flip-flops. You're going to wear flip-flops. Remember, you cannot wear it outside of the vicinity 10 feet out of your house.
No. Or if you're older than, like, 12.
You just got told.
Some shoe rules from us to you. Like anyone cares what my rules are.
You had it first. Here with Melissa Ridley, a.k.a. author extraordinaire, a.k.a. medieval enthusiast, a.k.a. the teacher of the youth.
Oh, that's kind.
A.k.a. the Rose with a fiery passion. AKA, I'm running out of AKAs.
I'm impressed. That was quite the string.
Well, see, back in my youthful days, I used to be, you know, somewhat of a rapper, but
I got that from your opening. I was so impressed. Like, you were just busting out the rhymes right, left, and sideways. And I was just, like, sitting back, receiving the rhymes, being, wow, he's doing this kind of off the cuff. That's really impressive. I have to have a pen and a piece of paper to do that nonsense.
Girl, sometimes it's either word vomit or it comes out okay.
Right? I mean, that's true. That's very true of me as well. Sometimes it's just like, no, that is bad. Nobody should ever, ever see what I just did. No. Yeah. And sometimes you know, it comes a little bit easier.
Yeah, because there have been a couple takes where I've been like, would you mind if I do that intro one more time? I mean, it only happens a handful of times. I'm just like...
Well, I mean, you can't be perfect all the time, right? I mean, I think about when television was always recorded in front of a live studio audience. And I am in awe of those actors and their ability to keep it together no matter what. And so few screw ups, right? That's so impressive. Like, I think about the comedies in particular, because once I have this thing where I'll start laughing, and if somebody else is laughing, my laugh catches their laugh, and then their laugh catches my laugh, and then we can't stop laughing. And so it's like this thing. right? Mm-hmm. And that is what would happen to me if I were an actor in a comedy series in front of a live studio audience. Like, we'd all just be laughing our asses off because none of us could stop.
See, girl, I wouldn't be able to do something like SNL. That's talent in itself.
Oh, no, I can't. I can't even imagine to come up with fresh content every single week that's original, that's, you know, audience driven. I mean, it's just like, yes, impressive. Like, I'm in awe. I'm absolutely in awe. You know, I've done theater. I've done musical theater. I've done regular theater. But it's kind of different, right? Because it's supposed to be live and organic. And if something goes awry, people expect that a little bit. So it's okay. Kind of.
I agree. Because, girl, like, I was a huge fan of SNL and Mad TV. And some of the sketches were just sketches. What is a sketch? The sketches.
Is that like the Dr. Seuss guys with the, oh no, that's Sneetches. I was thinking about the Sneetches. Sorry.
The Sneetches, the Peaches.
The Peaches. Yeah. The Sketches. We could do something with this. Sketches, Witches.
I was like, yo, just hanging out with my Sketches. You know, if I ever have kids, they're going to disown me fast. I'm totally going to get disowned. I'm like, oh my God, Dad, no!
Well, I do have kids, and they're going to be like, Mom, another one, really?
How old are your babies?
Oh, they're not babies anymore. I've got a 15-year-old, and I'm going to be 12 this weekend.
Oh, you got some grown kids.
Yeah, the 15-year-old did the illustrations for my book and the cover. Which is amazing. I'm so proud of her. I could never have done what she did at her age. She's just like a genius.
Ladies and gentlemen, not only is it a wonderful book with philosophies, poetic whims, and also different perspectives, this book is also family made.
It is family made.
Family made, family grade. For your mental raid. Okay, that was terrible. Okay, so.
With Gatorade.
Oh, yeah. Dunk the Gatorade. Pour it over. It's the championships. Yeah. Woo!
You know what? True story, I've never had Gatorade.
Really?
Nope.
Well.
I've had Gatorade ever. I drink, you know, tea and coffee and water and other things, but never Gatorade.
She's all natural.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say that. I do drink. Well, yeah, maybe. I mean, when it's 100 degrees in the shade and it's August, mm-hmm. That's when every once in a while, not very often, but every once in a while, I do like a Coke or like a root beer. Mm. But really only when it's unbearably, abysmally hot. And there's just something about drinking a cold soda on those days, but I don't do a lot of that either. No,
I'm as really much as useful.
Puritan about my drinking.
She stays pure. That's how you end up like this.
I don't know.
I'm not a doctor.
I think it's the vegetables. I do try to eat vegetables and cheese. I have a
remember,
problem.
Kids, eat your vegetables.
And cheese.
Oh, I love cheese.
Right?
Man, I had a good Havarti over the weekend.
Ooh.
Oh, man, this is how I know I've also gotten older. I get excited about things like cheese, Will.
Cheese, right? Yeah. I love to go to Trader Joe's and just look at the cheeses. And they've got amazing, like, goat cheese logs with the cranberry or the blueberry. And it's so
Ooh,
good.
I've had that. It's so good.
Right? There's or fig. That's always good too. Yeah.
Stop it, girl. You're making me hungry.
Now I have to stop at the store on the way home.
Well, Trader Joe's, guess who's coming to town?
I might be going to Trader Joe's.
Well, girl, if you want to just make a quick shipment to me, my address is none of your business, people. We'll talk after the show, because I might just. You might have to send me a wheel or something like that, or, you know, just a couple slices. I mean, Trader Joe's has Trader Joe's online.
It's true. It's very true.
Or Post made it. Guys, please sponsor me. Give me extra credits. Annie. So kids, eat your vegetable and eat your cheese. It's great protein, good for calcium, and also it is definitely something that will give you the moves.
The moves.
Okay, so where can people find you and find any of your wonderful works or anything of that sort?
Where can they see my work?
Yeah, like, do you have any, like, works you post online sometimes or anything like that?
Well, I mean, at World of Myth, I've published a short story and a poem there. Mostly my work right now has been scholarship. So if you really, really, really want to read, like, a scholarly article on women's wounds and Sir Thomas Malory's Mort d'Arthur, that's in Modern Philology. But my creative, I mean, this is my first big full book of creative work. So hopefully it is in fact the first, and there will be quite a few more, time and health permitting.
Well, it's all for the best on that one, girl. Shoot, I'm with you. Don't expire anytime soon.
I don't plan to. No.
Like, me and you are friends now. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, that's exciting. Yeah. No, I'm going to have to come to Kansas City.
Yes.
I know, right?
It's like, girl, I know some places we can go to. I know a couple good delis. We'll check it out. Anyway. But yes, it's official. Melissa Ridley is now my friend. And there's nothing you can do about it, people. But yes, can they find you on any social media or anything like that?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. I should do better with Instagram. I probably should. Yeah. So yeah, Twitter. Twitter is M. Ridley Elms. Lately, mostly just diatribes against white supremacists trying to take over medieval studies. And Facebook is Melissa Ridley Elms. But I don't really have. I should probably do an author page. It occurs to me. I probably shouldn't have, like, random people friending me on Facebook. Instagram, though. You can Instagram me. So.
Instagram. Don't be sliding up in her DM. She's married, guys.
Yeah, no, don't do that. I'll just disappoint you. I'll send you dick pics. It will be bad.
I'll send you see that? You're going to get a reversal.
Or polar bear dick pics. Like, the worst one I can find.
Polar bear dick pics.
They've got to be out
what
there.
What the hell is a polar bear dick pic? Me and you gonna talk after the show, but I gotta figure out this whole thing with polar bear dick pics. See, this is the stuff I need. See, ladies and gentlemen. See, I learned something new today. Polar bear dick pics exist, apparently. So,
I mean, I don't know if they do. I'd have to research it. But I am a researcher. You know, I have a PhD, so I will research and find the worst possible ones.
You mean to tell me you got a PhD and I've been calling you Miss Melissa instead of Dr. Melissa?
Oh, thank you. Yes.
I feel bad now. I've been calling you.
I'm just a writer. Just, well, Mel is good. We can just go with Mel. That's what everybody calls me.
Oh, well, Mel or Mel. Dr. Mel. Or,
that's kind of fun.
Dr. Elms or Dr. Ridley.
Dr. Mel, though. Dr. Mel sounds kind of like Dr. Phil or Dr. Oz. Let's just go with Mel.
Okay, let's just go with Mel. The only doctor that I will give credit to is, what's his name? I can't think of his name, but sometimes he hangs around comedians and stuff like that. He does Loveline. Who am I thinking of?
The only Loveline person I know is Delilah. She does, like, do you know Delilah? When I was a teen.
Dr. Drew.
Oh, okay, legit. Dr. Drew. Yeah,
Dr. Drew's legit. So, but Dr. Oz and Dr. Phil, they're not real doctors. Anyways, so.
Well, no, I mean, they have their MDs.
Okay, Dr. Phil didn't have his MD until later. I just want to make that argument clear. I don't have beef with Dr. Phil, but at the same time, you know what it is, Dr. Phil. I'm coming for you. No, I'm not. You got Oprah. Oprah will destroy me. I'm sorry. And I love you, Oprah.
I love Oprah. Who does not love Oprah? Everybody has to love Oprah.
And also, I got to give a shout out to White Oprah. That's Ellen DeGeneres. I love you too. I'm sorry, she is White Oprah. We've all come. So, thank you to the Oprahs, the Ellens, and
thank you to everybody who creates. Thank you to everybody who makes
things. Yes.
And who shares it. Like, the world just needs more people making and sharing and collaborating. We need more people role play gaming and
yes,
joining gaming communities and going to cons and just like,
well, you go to cons?
Oh, well, yeah. And just being real, like,
guys, we're best friends now.
We're gonna go to WizardCon next time it comes to SLU.
Wait, where's there a WizardCon at?
There was a WizardCon in St. Louis a couple years ago, 2016, 2017, somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah, we're officially best friends.
Or Chicago. There's always a con somewhere in Chicago. I think Chicago's like con land.
Oh, yeah. That's like the con place of the Midwest. Right? Yes.
So you just take the train and like go hang out in Chicago.
I've always wanted to take a train. I've never taken
a train before. It's the best. Oh, my gosh. I went to a conference. I went to the Modern Language Association conference, which is like the big conference for nerdy professors in English and modern nice. Language. And, you know, I'm going from St. Louis to Chicago and I, O'Hare.
Ugh.
So I didn't
want that airport.
But when I found out that you could just take the train, like I took the train and it was the most delightful thing. There was all this leg room and you could have all your stuff with you. There's no checking bags. There's no TSA patting you down, telling you you've got like some weapon in your hair because you have a lot of hair, whatever. And it was, you know, it was relaxed and we had a couple of stops and I mean, it was just, it was 6 hours of abs. I was just, it was delightful. I love the train. I would ride the train everywhere if I could just take trains, except it just, the problem is most of the conferences are on the coasts. And so trains are like a couple of days and I just don't have that kind of time. But Chicago was just like a nice 6 hour train ride. It was really cool.
See, I can do Chicago for that much. That's
yeah.
fine.
And it was only $37. So that's way better than a plane ticket.
yeah, I'm going to look into that. So that
and
way
you don't the have next to drive, week. Which is even better.
Yeah, because Chicago, I got a friend in, that lives in Indiana, but he can get to Chicago in 30 minutes. Shout out to Justin Juice Wallace. And he's been trying to get me to come to one of these wrestling events. I'm a pro wrestling fan, too.
Go to Chicago.
I need to go to Chicago, and that's probably the best way to get to Chicago.
You don't want
to
drive.
Girl, no, I am not driving 8 hours. Mm-mm. My biggest regret was when I drove 8 hours in my Ford Escape with a hole in the back of the car.
Oh, no.
All the way to Jacksonville, Florida.
Oh, no. That was a long car ride. That's like 17 hours?
Oh, that was 18 hours, girl.
Oh, God. Hey, that was a pretty good guess. I was only 1 hour off.
Oh, girl, no. You were accurate, though.
That was a really good guess.
I'm not going to lie. You were on point on that one, girl. See, this is the reason why she got a PhD.
A PhD in guessing how long it takes on car to get to Jackson, Florida.
She has an IQ that's above mine. See, it's great when I get people
to make
my show look smarter.
We don't have scores, so there's no way to compare that.
Well, I will say this. It's always great to have somebody who actually makes my show look smarter. I mean, seriously, this woman's brilliant. I've had so much fun with her, and she's also great. You've been able to, like, hang out here. You understand my sense of humor, that I'm just goofy. I'm not, like, trying to make it too intense here. So, like that, like, I mean, I do have some intelligence, but, you know, I also want to be kind of around.
Well, like a real person.
Yeah, right? Like,
which gets back to the world needs more people just being people and not posing and not trying so hard and not, yes, you know, artificing and not trying to put off something that's not there, or, you know, I mean, just like more creating, more making. We just really need that.
Yes, I agree. Yep. Me and her are going to be friends. I need smart friends in my life. She can tell me when I'm doing something dumb real quick or something. Like, Anthony, don't do that. You're being dumb. Thank you.
Yeah. I do that sometimes.
I mean,
it's always out of love, though. I mean, I always, like, I'm always, like, it's not meant to be mean.
Ladies and gentlemen, get yourself some smart friends. Get yourself a Melissa Ridley or Mel Ridley or Mel Elms or Mel Ridley Elms or Dr. Elm or Dr. Ridley or, you know what? She got way too many titles, y'all.
Hey,
she got just as many titles as I do with the AKAs.
Yeah.
I'm a stalker. I feel like it's Friday and I know she got some other stuff to do. But yeah. Guys, thank you so much for listening.
And, thank you.
Ms. Mel, thank you so much for your time today. For real.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. I had a good time.
All right. So with that, guys, my name is Anthony Anthem, a.k.a. Black Fabio, a.k.a. the Midnight Marauder, a.k.a. the Black Machismo, a.k.a. Let me just stop this. A.k.a. Mr. A.k.a. Guys, we're done for the day. She's out of here. I'm out of here. Good night. The Delivery Bros.